Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A magnificent Monday to you and a miraculous Monday to you. It's a really, really special day on the Cale Clark Show. It's the 12th day of the 12th month of this year of 2022. It's also, of course, the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe. You know, she defeated a culture of death and human sacrifice in the 16th century, and she's still at it in the 21st to this day. So I'm going to share a beautiful testimony with you of a death dealer Our Lady convinced to fight for the gospel of life. And how did 8 million people convert in less than 10 years in what is now Mexico because of Our Lady of Guadalupe? I'll unravel that mystery as well. It has a lot to do with that tilma, which is really never unraveled. It is miraculous too. And plus, I've got a great listener question about the gospel from yesterday. Of course, the third Sunday of Advent, Gaudete Sunday. Did John the Baptist really doubt that Jesus was the Messiah? And is doubt such a bad thing after all? And what's up with the locusts and wild honey, too? We're going to serve up some soul food today on the Cale Clark Show. And you can call in right now, 888-914-9149. We've got lots of other great stuff to talk about as well. You can also email me your questions. Love getting your listener questions, comments, ideas for the show, articles you might want me to take a look at. You can fire them off to Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We also had I really want to thank Father Rocky for a wonderful Christmas party, which we had on Friday in the Chicago area. It's our Relevant Radio Christmas party. First time I'd ever had the chance to attend, along with my wife, Patricia. Even Michaela made the trip with me this time. We had so much fun. And I really want to thank Father for that. I might even spill the beans about some of the hijinks that went on at the party. Nothing bad. Don't worry. But it was a heck of a lot of good, clean fun. And I thank everybody at Relevant for making this feel so welcome when we were in town. But again, today is such a great feast day. 888-914-9149. It's Our Lady of Guadalupe. And you know that in the 15th and 16th century, in what is now Mexico City, The native peoples there had a really, really difficult stretch. I mean, in their history, first they suffered a conquest by the Aztecs, then the Spanish conquistadors came in, and it was really, really harsh. And one of the big reasons why the faith had a hard time taking hold there was because of the brutal actions of the conquistadors towards the people. A lot of abuse, enslaved a lot of the people. The Franciscan missionaries that came along, also from Spain, had a really tough time building trust. And of course, the Aztecs, we know that they had brutal customs. They would harvest the organs of victims for human sacrifice. If you've ever seen Mel Gibson's movie Apocalypto, it's a little bit like that. Not exactly. Apocalypto is about the Mayans, but the same brutal practices were practiced by the Aztecs, offering human sacrifices to their pagan gods. And by their own records, we should mention this, by their own Aztec records, about 250,000 people were sacrificed every year. In fact, there is a case of one pagan temple that was dedicated. There was a four-day celebration, and more than 80,000 men and women were said to have been slaughtered over those 4 days. And so the terror that they would have been feeling on the regular would have been incredibly difficult to manage. And resisting conversion to Catholicism, not wanting to leave their idols behind, despite all this brutality, despite the best efforts of the Franciscans, nothing was really working until 1531. Mid-16th century almost, the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared to, of course, a peasant man, an older man named Juan Diego. And I've talked about this before. Most of you know the story very well. I'd be more than happy to share more detail on that, but most of you know about how she appeared to him on Tepeyac Hill, the famous image emblazoned on his tilma, which is still, of course, at the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe. in Mexico City. I tried in the past to get a pilgrimage group together to go see this. I've never been there, and perhaps you have. And if you have, and it really touched you, I'd love to hear about that. 888-914-9149. At the time, there were a lot of murders and killings happening of foreign nationals in the area, and I just couldn't get enough people to trust that we would be okay. And so we never made the trip, and I've never been there to this day, but I hope to get there, hope to make a pilgrimage there. And there's a Catholic apologist by the name of Jim Burnham. Most of you know him. He's a good friend of the program. He's guest hosted this show before. He has noted, and this is a really fascinating point, that the four Marian dogmas really are all corroborated in Our Lady of Guadalupe when she appeared to Juan Diego. Of course, she appeared in a body. The Assumption of Our Lady, body and soul into the glories of heaven. She calls herself ever virgin. And of course, the Mother of God as well. Two more Marian dogmas. And the name Guadalupe, most of you know this, but in case you don't, Guadalupe actually has two potential meanings. It could mean she who is without stain. This obviously has reference to the Immaculate Conception, without the stain of sin, original sin. But also, Guadalupe could mean she who crushes the stone serpent. Now, when she appeared, when she emblazoned this image of herself on Juan Diego's tilma, she is standing upon a crescent moon, which was the symbol, by the way, of the serpent god of the Aztecs. And this is kind of a $5 word. Don't ask me to spell it, but it's pronounced Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl, and that was the snake god of the Aztecs. And really, a lot of this human sacrifice is tied up with the worship of the snake god. And so she's standing upon this crescent moon, which was a symbol of this Aztec evil deity, if you will. It kind of goes back to Genesis 3:15. In the first book of the Bible, it's called the Proto-Evangelium, or the first gospel, where God is talking to the Satan, to the serpent, to the dragon. And he says that there would one day be a woman who would be at total enmity with the serpent. That could only be Mary. It can't be Eve, because Eve is in some way already in league with the devil through her sin. I talked about this in my article. You can check it out on the Relevant Radio website on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. Look that up at the archives on the blog. So it can't be Eve. It's got to be Mary. And the serpent god of the Aztecs, obviously it's an image of Satan. You know, really all pagan gods are either the figments of the imagination of the peoples who worship them, or they could be demons in disguise. The Old Testament says that the gods of the Gentiles are devils or demons. So those are really the only two options. There's only one true and living God. And so Our Lady of Guadalupe called Juan Diego also her son, clearly confirming she's her spiritual mother, just as Jesus said to the beloved disciple John at the foot of the cross in John's gospel, "Woman, here's your son, here is your mother." And of course, he's called the beloved disciple. He's not called by his name John, because he's kind of a stand-in for all of us in John's gospel. And so it really is a wonderful picture. The woman of Revelation 12, which is the first reading today at Mass, with the moon under her feet, the crown of 12 stars, the sun shining. This is Our Lady, very similar to how she appeared in Guadalupe. So this is obviously also very culturally relevant for the Aztecs, and it really brought about these conversions. I'm going to talk about a really amazing experience that I had some years ago in Italy, kind of addressing this, but about 8 million people, 8 to 10 million people converted in a very, very short time span, between 7 and 10 years after the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe. With apologies to St. Paul, Our Lady of Guadalupe is the greatest evangelist in the history of the church, and nobody has ever seen that kind of conversion happen. And part of why it was so relevant and it was so powerful was because of the way that she appeared to Juan Diego. And Philip Kozlowski, writing for Alatea for that website, he's got a little nice piece up that just came up today about the hidden symbolism of Our Lady of Guadalupe's image. And there have been many books written about this. I have a couple of them that talk about the meanings of the flowers on her dress, everything. the cord around her waist. Let's talk about this just a little bit. First of all, her face and her hair. Now, the way that she appeared in Guadalupe was completely different from other depictions of the Madonna in works of art. Specifically, she appears with the appearance, the complexion of the native peoples, the indigenous peoples of what is now Mexico. Specifically, she appeared as a mestiza. A mestiza, what does that mean? Well, it's a combination of Mexican and Spanish heritage. What does this really mean ultimately? She's for everybody. She's Catholic. Makes sense, doesn't it? Her eyes are looking downwards. Why? Because she is not God. Now, obviously, it's still an anti-Catholic trope to say that we worship Mary. We don't. We only worship the one true and living God. We're not breakers of the first commandment. But the fact that she's looking down, that indicated to the native peoples that she was not a god. She was humble. And the humility of Our Lady really comes through, of course, in her Magnificat. The way that she's looking, too, it's a very tender, very motherly gaze. I love the eyes of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Her hair is also loose. Why does it appear loose and kind of down? It's not up in a bun or anything like that. What does that mean? In the culture of that time, it meant that she was a virgin maiden. Let's talk about her mantle, her tunic, what she was wearing. A rose-tinted tunic, four-petaled flowers imprinted all over it. What does that mean? It symbolizes the earth. It symbolizes the four seasons. The rose color might be a reference to the dawn. It's really interesting. The dawn of a new era. The dawn of a new era of evangelization. Of course, Our Lady of Guadalupe is the star of the new evangelization. She's really the patron mother of Relevant Radio. And that's why she appears. If you download the Relevant Radio app, and I hope you have, you can see, of course, the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. She appears on all of our corporate communications. We entrust this whole mission of bringing Christ to the world through the media to her, because she's the greatest evangelist of all time, like I said. So that's really important to note. So the rose color points to the dawn of a new time, a new age. Now, she also has this bluish turquoise colored cloak with stars upon it. This meant royalty to the peoples. She is a queen. Also, it meant that she was from heaven. The stars indicate that she comes from heaven. Interesting. So, of course, having been assumed into heaven, she's visiting earth for a specific purpose. What about the ribbon? She's got this black ribbon around her belly. That means that she's pregnant, according to the indigenous culture of what is now Mexico at that time. Also, you kind of tell she's got a bit of a baby bump. If you really look at the image closely, I think it's there. I really do think it's there. So she is about to give birth. She's very pregnant. Her hands are obviously pictured in prayer. They're folded in prayer. Again, she is praying. She is not a goddess. She is praying to her divine son. Her knee is slightly bent. Also could be indicating a posture of prayer. And then there's this medallion that's around her neck. Have you ever thought about that? If you really take a look at the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, she's got this medallion around her neck, and it has a cross on it. Obviously, she is fully dedicated to her son, Jesus Christ. And so she was at the foot of that cross, the actual cross, the true cross. The sun is behind her. This means that she is greater. They had the serpent god, of course. Human sacrifices were made. They also had a sun god. And the fact that she is standing in front of the sun means that she's greater than the Aztec sun god. Treading upon the moon, we talked about that. And then, of course, there's this angel. Now, people have argued whether the angel was actually part of the original image or whether that was added later. There's all these debates about that. But the Aztecs, according to their pagan culture, when they made these human sacrifices, the angels would take these sacrifices to their gods to appease them. Well, that's not the case here. According to Philip Kozlowski, the angel is basically beneath Our Lady. And it's really showing how Mary made a sacrifice of her life. She is the picture of dedication to our God, to our Lord, to our Savior Jesus Christ. She says, "Be it done unto me according to your word." Here I am, the handmaid of the Lord. I'm at your disposal, Lord. So this is really what we have to make. We have to make the interior sacrifice of our life as well. So those who were royal figures were lifted high upon the shoulders and carried throughout the cities and towns. This is why Mary is carried on the shoulders of this angel. The angel also has wings, by the way. Now, they've looked at icons of the Aztecs, and it looks an awful lot like eagle's wings in their iconography and their history. And so, of course, I don't want to start singing the hymn on eagle's wings. It's kind of cheesy. Not going to sing that. Some of you guys are fans, I know. But she's lifted up with the wings of an eagle in the book of Revelation. Think about Revelation chapter 12. It talks about how she's carried away into the wilderness on the wings of an eagle, where she has to remain for a certain period of time. So all of this is very evocative here of this image. The woman was given the two wings of the great eagle, it says in Revelation 12:14, that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness. So the symbolism was not lost on the indigenous peoples of what is now Mexico, taught them a lot of things. Just like in medieval times, people learned the gospel very often. It's not that they were, you know, unintelligent, not by any means. Just because they were illiterate, they couldn't read, that doesn't mean that they weren't of intelligence. And so people were often taught by symbols throughout Christian history. There have been a number of great symbols throughout, going from the fish symbol, the ichthus, which is a symbol of Christ, to, of course, the cross, to, of course, the many statues and icons of the faith. And so in the same way, Our Lady of Guadalupe is this great icon on the tilma of Juan Diego that taught them so many truths about the faith. And we could get into, we're not going to get into this today, but of course, scientists have looked at the eyes and the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and apparently you can see reflections of Bishop Zumarraga when the tilma was unfolded, the roses fall to the floor, and the shock and amazement, the people who are in the room can be reflected in the eyes of the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. It's truly supernatural, very much like the Shroud of Turin, I think. This is really an incredible artifact, a supernatural artifact, and I just love this. And so what I was going to mention to you guys was that in 2005, which is the year that I got married, my wife and I went to Assisi. We went to Italy for a honeymoon. We spent most of the time in Rome. But we went to Assisi. We did a day trip there, and we happened to meet an American priest who was there. And he was kind of giving some people, a small group, a tour of Assisi. He invited us to join him, and he was a great guy. And we got talking, and it turned out that this guy did his doctoral studies, his doctoral dissertation. It was all about homilies that were preached in what is now Mexico following the appearances of Our Lady of Guadalupe, after the tilma, after Juan Diego, after the basilica was built, and the miraculous image that she left behind. Now, I would love to get a hold of this. That would make for some pretty incredible reading, although, I don't know, these guys probably didn't have to do too much in terms of their preaching, because the image, like I said, really spoke for itself. Over 8 million people, by some accounts, 8 to 10 million converted to the faith in just a few years as this spread about and people saw the image. Again, it was stubbornly infertile mission territory prior to 1531. I've always found it fascinating that, well, in Europe, on the continent, you know, in the 16th century, the faith was being, you know, rent apart. It was being torn apart. The Protestant Revolution, Luther's revolt, and everything that followed. Millions of people defecting from the Catholic faith for Protestantism. While that was going on in Europe, in the old world, in the new world, at the very same time, the most effective evangelistic movement in the history of the world was taking place in the Americas. So it's just an incredible story of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And when I come back, I'm going to share with you a very personal account, a beautiful testimony of someone who really was an architect of the culture of death, who was converted by Our Lady of Guadalupe. 888-914-9149. It's the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, December the 12th. It's the Cale Clark Show, only on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Cale Clark Show. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. If you've ever been to see the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe live in Mexico City, I would love to hear about that, 888-914-9149. And we talked about before the break how millions of people converted because of the image. She's really the star of the new evangelization. And of course, we can't in our own lives really worry too much about converting entire cultures. This is a work of God. We have to focus on the person in the mirror becoming more converted to Christ. That's also a work of God. And the people that are in our orbit, we can obviously bring the good news to individuals one by one. And speaking of individual conversions that have been brought about through Our Lady of Guadalupe, I read a powerful one. It was written by, it was really a testimony written by a former abortionist who actually grew up as a Catholic. And at the time, he didn't see any conflict between his faith and what he was doing for a living. His life was also transformed by Our Lady of Guadalupe. His name is Dr. John Brukowski, and he's the founder and president of Divine Mercy Care, the founder of Tepeyac OBGYN in Fairfax, Virginia. And in fact, he wrote a little piece about this for the National Catholic Register website. It was just published today. And I'm just going to read a bit of it to you because it really shed some light on, I think, the formation or lack of formation that's happening in the church in America and in certain quarters, and just how God can reach beyond this. And he talked about how in the culture, Our Lady of Guadalupe, her image has become an icon associated with all kinds of different things, dignity and hope, of course, life being chief among them. But he said this, he said, quote, "For me, she represents something more personal because it was during her intercession, during my medical training, that the Lord called me to turn away from performing elective abortions and to practice life-affirming medicine. But," he said, "I ignored the divine voice at first." He said he was raised in a faithful Catholic home with Polish parents, and they trusted in the Catholic school system, if you will. But there was a lot of confusion. There was a lot of dissent. Situational ethics was the name of the game. Proportionalism. If you've ever heard of this, this is this idea that, well, when you're looking at moral acts, you have to sort of look at, you know, sort of, it's kind of a balancing act. It depends on the situation or what the harms might be. And yeah, maybe some bad is done, but maybe, you know, some other lesser goods might result. Who knows? But proportionalism, they were the foundations, along with situational ethics, of his undergraduate study. Now, he went to a Jesuit university. He doesn't name that university, but, and again, not saying all Jesuits are off the rails here, but I also attended what was founded as a Jesuit university in the 1800s. It had strayed far from Catholic principles when I was there. But the relativistic assumption, he says, was that no moral norms are absolutely binding. And that's, of course, untrue. But according to his upbringing, he tried to just weigh all the potential good and evil that could result from different decisions and try to choose the action that brings about the greatest good. Anyways, he took these ideas with him when he went to medical school, and he applied them to what he was learning. And he was planning on, of course, becoming an OBGYN about women's reproductive health. And he believed, he says at the time, he believed that abortion was ugly, but in some cases it might be necessary. He says, "Who was I, the physician, to decide? The patient had autonomy." Eventually, he says, "I was seduced by the new opium of the liberated, elective abortion on demand because the mom asked for it after we, the medical staff, encouraged it." End of quote. So he says that before he began his medical residency, he went to, of course, the famous Tepeyac Hill, just outside of Mexico City, gazed up at the famous relic of Our Lady of Guadalupe, the Tilma. His parents had told him about it when he was a young boy. And of course, we all know the story, but how vivid that image was to him. And as he was looking at the real image in, of course, the basilica there, he said that he thought about Juan Diego. He thought about Juan Diego, who, of course, at that time had maybe even personally witnessed human sacrifices under Aztec rule. A lot of them would have been children before the conquistadors, you know, really tried to shut all that down. And here was Our Lady of Guadalupe, a sash around her waist, indicating, as we talked about before, that she was with child, carrying the Christ child in her womb. And he says this, quote, "There I was, the child sacrificer, before her, before Our Lady of Guadalupe. I sat in silence, staring at the woman I had known about my whole life, but I still couldn't understand. Then something happened that I can hardly explain. Inwardly, I heard a voice, clear and strong. Why are you hurting me? Why are you hurting me? I nervously scanned the faces in the pews around me, searching for the owner of the voice or any indication that someone else had heard that question, that booming question. Nothing." So he tried to rationalize away. He said, it must have been the heat, maybe the beer I'd had at lunch. I couldn't possibly have heard a voice from Christ or his mother, he thought. So he brushed it off. He dismissed whatever voice he thought he'd heard that day at the foot of Tepeyac Hill. So he went on, completed his medical residency, performing elective abortions because he thought that it was good medicine. He says, quote, "I maimed women and murdered their unborn children. I was hurting Christ, his mother, and his church. But 2 years later, the mother brought her son to me and made her message miraculously clear." He was on another pilgrimage in Europe. And so he had some sort of a mystical experience with Our Lady, and in which she encouraged him to be a better doctor, to follow the teachings of the church, and he received mercy. He says the scales fell from his eyes, just like the Apostle Paul. The weight of his sin melted away. And he realized, he said, the voice he had heard 2 years before in Mexico was really a missed opportunity. He ignored it at the time, but now he had a second chance to respond. So he returned to a full practice of his faith. He left this practice of doing elective abortions behind him, and he started to practice what he calls life-affirming medicine. So that's what he did. He started a new practice in Fairfax, Virginia, and he named it Tepeyac OBGYN. And so he really wanted to combine the best of modern medicine with the healing presence of Christ. He wants to treat all patients as individuals, body, soul, and spirit, all taken into account. And he says, quote, "I wanted to cooperate with a woman's fertility. It is a natural, healthy function, not a disease to be repressed, to affirm children in their dignity. Children are gifts and therefore joys. Our Lady also asked me to see the poor and see them daily. So I was determined to welcome all patients into our office, including physically, emotionally, spiritually, or financially underserved patients. But more than one-third of our patients are women in need," he says. "In order to bridge the gap and keep an open door, we started a fundraising organization called Divine Mercy Care, which covers medical costs, other patient needs, hospital delivery fees, providing Uber rides for patients without transportation, even hotel rooms for a patient who needs a safe place to stay." And so Our Lady of Guadalupe said to Juan Diego, remember this, "Do not fear any illness or anxiety or pain. Am I not here who am your mother?" And he says, to me, her words are completely interconnected with women's health and the church. Healthcare providers need to be reminded to do no harm. See their patients holistically, body and soul. Lend an ear to the patients. Treat illnesses, vexations, anxieties, and pains whenever possible. So, not seeking Band-Aid solutions that make matters worse. Women deserve medicine, he says, that does not poison their bodies with class 1 carcinogens. And of course, I think he's talking about birth control pills there. It does not recommend killing their unborn children, does not treat their fertility as problematic or their unborn child as some sort of a transmitted disease. And to the churches, we must remember she is our mother. She is called the queen this Advent season. We have to remember this. And so he's got a huge image of Our Lady of Guadalupe in his medical office, and she's really a mother to all the mothers who walk through those doors. And so what an incredibly uplifting testimony of someone who really is converted from being a dealer of death to somebody who's an advocate for the culture of life. Dr. John Bukowski, the president of Divine Mercy Care, founder of Tepeyac OBGYN in Fairfax, Virginia. So apparently he wrote a book called Two Patients, My Conversion from Abortion to Life-Affirming Medicine. You can follow him on Twitter, at John Bukowski, Bruchalski. So that's how Our Lady of Guadalupe reached out and impacted his life. I'm sure that she's impacted many of you as well. So why don't you call in, tell me your story, 888-914-9149. Let's go to the phones right now. Let's go to Sandra in Oregon. Hi, Sandra.
Hello, Kale. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
I just want to share my experience growing up about probably 25 minutes from Mexico City.
Wow.
And growing up in there, I have to say that I didn't realize until becoming an adult how blessed I was growing up so close to a Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Mm-hmm. My mom, very devoted Catholic, would take us. I remember several times she would gather a lot of youth from the neighborhood, and we would walk all the way to the Basilica, which it would take us about 9 hours. But, you know, you being a kid, mm-hmm. it seemed longer than that. But
oh, yeah.
All those memories that I have, it's just very a blessing to me. Especially what I want to share is that I was born with a heart disease, and doctors been telling me my whole life that I need open heart surgery. But before my mom taking me to my appointments growing up in Mexico City in the hospital, she never skipped a day. Before we went to that doctor, she would take me to Our Blessed Mother. And I remember her praying to her son. I just put her under your mantle. And, you know, until this day, doctors cannot explain why I have the lifestyle that I have with the heart disease that I have. They say it's just a miracle. And I really believe it's a miracle for the intercession of Our Blessed Mother. And I just want to share that for me, she continued doing miracles in my life, not just my health issues, but many miracles. And you just remind me, but listen to your show today, honestly, it brought tears to my eyes because just, you know, bringing back those memories growing up so close to Our Blessed Mother of Guadalupe and visiting her on a regular basis. And I just want to share that. And thank you so much for your show. I have learned so much from you.
Oh, thank you, Sandra. That is very kind. Please pray for me. And wow, what a great phone call. And thank you for calling in. What a privilege to live so close to the Telma of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Amazing. And so she's done miracles in your life. Our Lord has done miracles through her. Intercession in your life, and I'm sure in the lives of so many listeners right now. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Les in Chicago. Hi, Les.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A number of years ago, my wife and I were on vacation in Ohio, and it was on December 12th, and there was a shrine in the area, so we stopped in. There was a line of people waiting to get a close-up look of a full-size image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And one of the workers there pointed out that I believe it was in Our Lady's left sleeve that there was an image of two babies.
Really?
And she even pointed to them with her pen. And when I got up close, I looked. And, yeah, I could see, I saw for myself the two faces of two human babies right next to each other, you know, kind of their cheeks up against each other. But, you know, and then I had remembered that several years later, and, you know, I tried finding that in an image, you know, currently, and I couldn't find it. It's kind of like, it was kind of like, you know, Where's Waldo in this image, you know, where you really, really had a focus to find. And then you say, oh, yeah, there it is. And I was just wanted to share that to see if, you know, any of your other listeners or maybe you had heard of that.
Yeah, no, thanks for calling in, Lester. I haven't heard of that specifically, but There have been a lot of writings about the Tilma that, and the image of Our Lady there that again highlight how it really is a catechism. I've heard that the stars on her mantle were the exact position of the constellation in the sky that night when she appeared. There's all kinds of different things that are really culturally relevant to the indigenous peoples of that time. And so, there's certainly a lot to be learned there. Some of it might be speculation, but I think a lot of it is certainly rooted in the culture of that time. And again, to enculturate the gospel, it's something we're really all called to do. And to just, the message never changes, of course. The content, as St. Jose Maria said, well, you know, the message, the letter is the gospel, and you are the envelope. And so the envelope sometimes maybe is a little bit lacking and maybe is a little bit crumpled up and not what it should be. But the message of the gospel is really what's key. And so we all have it's truth poured through personality, right? And this is what we have to do with our friends, with our neighbors. We have to bring Christ to them, just as Our Lady brought Christ to the peoples of what is now Mexico through her image, the way that she appeared as Our Lady of Guadalupe. Let's go now to Patricia in Austin, Texas. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. My last 2 years ago during Uri in Texas, when we had no power
for
10 or 12 days, my husband and I were in our home and we ended up... The temperature in the home was 15 degrees.
Oh, my goodness.
And the hotels had no room. There was nowhere to go. And we literally were freezing to death. And we were developing hypothermia, which we didn't realize right away because we were both in the freezing conditions. Mm-hmm. And I have a tapestry of Our Lady of Guadalupe that was gifted to me from some sisters, nuns that I used to work with. And I put that on top of us. And within an hour, we were so hot, we had to take all the other covers off.
I'm telling you,
she literally saved our lives. She saved our lives. It was still 15 degrees in our house for hours and hours. So we were under that, we were wrapped in that tapestry for about 12 hours. And then, the next day the power came back on. I mean, she saved our lives. I'm absolutely sure of it.
That was a very, very close call. Yeah, that was so, so tragic when the power grid went down and, man, 15 degrees in your home and near hypothermia. My goodness. Well, thank you for calling in, Patricia, and sharing that. And yeah, that the tapestry of Our Lady of Guadalupe certainly helped you guys to stay warm and to bring life. And she's responsible for saving lives in a lot of different ways, for sure, through her intercession. Thank you for calling in, Patricia, and thanks for listening to the show. And you can call in too, 888-914-9149. I got to take a quick break right now on the show, but we'll be right back with a great listener question from the mailbag I'm going to share with you, 888-914-9149. Be right back. We receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor can support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call in. You can also email the show, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Speaking of that email address, Cale at relevantradio.com, I got a question from Diane in Santa Barbara, California. It was all about the gospel of the day yesterday. Now, don't forget, it was Gaudete Sunday. Gaudete Sunday, of course, is the day where the priests and deacons and bishops, they wear rose-colored vestments. And we have one day in Advent like that as well, one Sunday in Advent, but Gaudete Sunday, which means to rejoice. And of course, I know the priest will say, hey, it's not pink. It's not pink. It's actually salmon. Salmon's a very strong fish, very manly, swims upstream against the current. Anyways, third Sunday in Advent. And here's the gospel. It comes to us from Matthew chapter 11. And it says this, when John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? Jesus answered them, go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me. So Diane's question is this. She says, Dear Cale, I'm very puzzled by the gospel reading from Matthew 11. Why did John send messengers to ask if Jesus really was the Messiah? Was he doubting? Were they doubting? What's the real story? If John was doubting, how can he be the greatest ever born of a woman? Of course, that it doesn't include Jesus when Jesus says, hey, the greatest ever born of woman was John the Baptist. He's kind of the last Old Testament prophet. You know, the way he dresses, these motifs, he's hanging out by the Jordan River. Obviously, it references the crossing of the Jordan River by the Israelites and dressing like Elijah and eating locusts and wild honey. I'll get into that. If I can't do it tonight, I'll do it tomorrow. Explain what that diet was all about. Producer Jim sent me a meme, a really funny meme of John the Baptist. Happy Advent, you brood of vipers. Well, this is kind of what he was all about. And was he doubting? Now, I heard this in a homily. I went to the very beautiful shrine to Maximilian Kolbe, the National Shrine at Marytown, when I was in the Chicago area for the Relevant Radio Christmas festivities. And the deacon who was given the homily, he said this, and I've heard this so many times throughout the years, to explain why did John send the messengers? Was John doubting? And a lot of the church fathers say, no, he wasn't. And I grant this could be the answer. This could be the answer. I don't think it is, but they said, well, the reason why John sent these guys to Jesus to ask, you know, are you the one who is to come or should we look for another? And by the way, that's a really fancy way of saying, are you the Messiah, the one who is to come? It's a very, you don't want to say the word Messiah. If the Romans catch wind of that, you know, oof, there could be trouble for Jesus. But are you the Messiah or are you not? Well, a lot of the church fathers said that really those guys were doubting. And so, you know, John was in prison, and so their faith was kind of wavering. So John says, you go ask him yourself. But I actually think that John himself was doubting, and I don't think that was sinful in any stretch of the imagination. A lot of people do ask the question, is doubt a sin? I would say, well, it kind of depends. What kind of doubt are you talking about? If you're honestly seeking answers, if you're honestly seeking truth, and you're not quite sure yet, that's different from being obstinate. You have enough evidence, and you're just refusing to change your life. That's not what John was doing here. I think he was honestly doubting at this moment. And there's a good reason for that, by the way. He would have reason to doubt. And I'm going to talk about that in just a second. So, by the way, the fact that he was doubting, the fact that this is even in the gospel, we know this isn't a made-up story. This is potentially really embarrassing for John. And the way that Jesus even answers the question, he doesn't say to them, yeah, I'm the Messiah. He says it, he answers the question in a very unique way. Now, he does sort of say yes, but not that clearly. Again, we know that this isn't made up. If it was a made up story after the fact, he would have said way more emphatically, yes, I am the Messiah. So what's going on here? Well, John at the time, he's in prison in this great fortress that Herod the Great had set up called Machaerus. This was very imposing. It was on the eastern side of the Dead Sea. And Herod Antipas, so of course, one of the sons of Herod the Great, put him in this prison. And when he's in jail, he's hearing about what's going on with Jesus. He's obviously pointed people towards Jesus. And in Isaiah chapter 61, which was the first reading on Sunday, it says this in Isaiah 61, verse 1, the anointed one, and again, that's a fancy way of saying Messiah. The anointed of the Lord is to proclaim liberty to the captives and freedom to the prisoners. Bring out prisoners from the dungeon. It says that in Isaiah 42:7. The Messiah will bring out prisoners from the dungeon. But hang on here. John says, I'm still here. I'm still in the dungeon. I'm still chained up. What's up with this? What's going on? If Jesus is really the Messiah, why hasn't he done a prison break already? Where's the vengeance against the enemies of God? Isaiah 61 verse 2 talks about the day of vengeance of our God. And so there was this sort of thought that when the Messiah, when he came, would take vengeance against the enemies of God. And that would include maybe people like Herod Antipas who had imprisoned John. So that's I think, the reason why John was doubting. Part of what the Messiah was supposed to do is not just heal the blind, make the lame walk, the deaf hear, raise the dead, preach the gospel to the poor. And Jesus is doing all these things. That's what he said. Hey, go and tell John what you see. The blind receive their sight, lame walk, lepers are cleansed, deaf hear, all that stuff. Blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me. So he's basically saying, I am fulfilling what was expected of the Messiah. I know I haven't done the prison break yet. You're just going to have to trust me on this one. And of course, we know John doesn't get out of prison. He has to pay with his life for his testimony to the bridegroom. But here's where the archaeology really helps us too. One of the Dead Sea Scroll fragments that was discovered, it's actually, to be technical, it's called 4Q521. Which means it was found in Cave 4 at Qumran in the Dead Sea region, and that's where they found most of the scrolls. 4Q fragment number 521. This is what it says in this Dead Sea scroll. It says, "The heavens and earth shall obey his Messiah. He will honor the pious upon the throne of his eternal kingdom. He will set the prisoners free, opening the eyes of the blind, raising up those who are bowed down. He shall heal the critically wounded. He shall revive the dead. He shall send the gospel to the poor." Now, that's exactly what it says. It very much alludes to the book of Isaiah. And when we see this, this is obviously about the Messiah. So this is what people, the Dead Sea Scrolls are written, you know, around the time of the life of Jesus. Some of them date to the 3rd century, 2nd century, 1st century BC. But this is how people were thinking. When the Messiah comes, he's going to do this sort of stuff. So this is all sort of in the background when John is asking this question. Again, what about the prison break part? What about setting the prisoners free? You haven't done that yet. That's the expectation. So Jesus says, hey, I am doing all this stuff. I am the one who is to come. And Jesus actually concludes this whole thing with a beatitude. Yeah, there's more beatitudes than what are in the beatitudes. You know, earlier in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew's Gospel, Jesus gives another beatitude here. He says, "Blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me." It's another kind of beatitude. Huh. What does it mean? To take no offense at me? Literally to be scandalized. Anybody who is scandalized by me and what I'm doing or what I'm not doing. In Matthew 13:57, it says, they took offense. They were scandalized by him. Think about John chapter 6, when Jesus is teaching about the Eucharist. He says, you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood, or you have no life within you. Jesus says in John 6:61, does this offend you? Does this cause you to stumble? In other words, if you are sort of falling down in your faith because of me or anything I've done or anything I've said, that's a problem. That is a problem. And so all the blessings of the Messianic age, they are happening in the ministry of Jesus on earth. But as far as the judgment part, the day of vengeance of our God, that's mentioned in Isaiah 61:2. And John the Baptist is obviously longing for this. He's longing for righteousness to be revealed and for, you know, for the guilty to pay and all this stuff. That's far off still in the future at some level. So it was tough for him to accept at that moment. He had a moment of weakness, I think, and that's okay. So did Peter. Peter did the same sort of stuff. What did he do? He took up a sword, right, and tried to defend Jesus by force, chops off the ear of the high priest's servant. He really tried to split him in half. He just missed. He didn't just sort of take a Ginsu knife and said, can you just stand there for a second while I slice your ear off? No. He really took a swipe at him. And so lots of saints have had these moments of weaknesses, and you and I have in our own lives as well. So it only becomes a sin if we really kind of remain obstinate in this and don't seek the answers. And that's what John did. He was seeking the answer so that he could move on. He could get over this little problem in his faith. Well, you know, it really helps you to get over issues in your faith is entrusting them to our Lord through the intercession of Our Lady of Guadalupe, especially today when we pray the rosary. And later tonight, the Family Rosary Across America. It's going to take place at the Shrine of Christ's Passion in Indiana. I've been there. If you go on my Twitter feed, I actually posted a picture, my tweet for today's show, of me at that shrine. I went there with Father Rocky. They have a beautiful, beautiful statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe and of Juan Diego. It's the best representation I've ever seen. Not that I've seen the original live, I haven't, but this is absolutely gorgeous. And Father Rocky and Drew Mariani will be there at the Shrine of Christ's Passion live tonight for the Family Rosary Across America. So that's coming up. at 7 Central. But before that, of course, Timory's coming up with Trending, so stay tuned for that. Really want to thank Jim Schaefer for producing. Patrick Alog took all your phone calls. I'll be back tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.